We're joined now by Noelle Straub. She is the deputy managing editor of Stateline. This group monitors issues of importance across state legislatures, and the Louisiana legislature convenes on March 9th. And Noelle, if you were listening to Nancy Eisenberg, you probably heard her last statement about voter issues, and voting access is something that you're following very closely. What's going on across our great land regarding any kind of potential legislation to protect voting access?
Hi, well, thanks for having me on. So at Stateline, we every year do a look ahead at the 2020 or the next year's legislative session and what topics are going to be hot in state legislatures. And yeah, we definitely found that voting access is going to be one of the big issues, obviously, with the election coming up in November. And what we found is that in Democratic-controlled states, lawmakers are trying to expand access to the ballot. So there's efforts in several states to enfranchise formerly incarcerated felons, give them the right to vote again, to expand early voting, implement automatic voter registration, whereas if you go to, like, the DMV, you'll automatically be registered to vote. So those are some of the bills in Democratic states. And in Republican-controlled states, it's a very different picture. Lawmakers there are more concerned about integrity of the vote and making sure that nobody who's not supposed to vote gets to vote. So those efforts are more to make it more difficult to vote on college campuses, to restrict early voting or voting by mail. And a lot of states are trying to add new voter ID requirements, so you'd have to show an ID when you get to the polls in order to vote. So, yeah, we found a pretty big partisan split in states across the country on how they're handling this issue. And, you know, it's going to be a pretty big deal, especially in states like Wisconsin. There's a big fight going on right now over purging voters from the rolls. And, you know, Republicans there think, you know, they haven't gotten enough people off the rolls who may have moved to another state or are no longer eligible to vote. Democrats there think, you know, these voters should be given a much longer period of time to respond to the state to say, yeah, I'm still here and I still want to vote. So that.
Okay, we do have some folks who want to chime in with you. Noelle Straub, who is with Stateline, and today the Pew Charitable Trust, in conjunction with Stateline, is revealing issues that are dominating state capitals this year. 877-217-5757. David in Atlanta. David, you're on with Noelle Straub. Hi, David.
Good morning to everyone. You know, it is despicable. Like, efforts in Georgia have been made to reduce black participation by closing voting stations in areas of black population, given the civil rights workers who have died for that right, like Medgar Evers and the civil rights workers in Mississippi. It's despicable. And I sure hope sports betting gets a fair chance in the legislature. It's something that people do regardless whether it's legal or not, and if the taxpayers can benefit, I say so be it.
All right. What about sports betting? Is that a hot topic across the country? Noelle?
Yeah, sports betting is definitely. We've written a few articles about that as well. It's the Supreme Court made it legal, and it just took off, and states that allow sports betting are getting a lot of tax revenue and much more revenue than the states across the border from them who don't allow it. So there's a lot of arguments on both sides. Some people think, you know, gambling is very addictive and it becomes a problem and state-sponsored gambling shouldn't be allowed. Other people say, you know, like your caller said, people are going to do it anyway and might as well get the tax revenue, and it's a huge boost for education and roads and other things taxes need to be paid for. So, yeah, we've written quite a bit about how gambling is spreading across the states.
Another listener asked about vaping. Are there issues and laws that are in place on a state level that will address the problems that we know of regarding vaping?
Yeah, that's another very hot topic this year. There's all sorts of states that are, and cities and counties as well as states, that are calling for flavor bans to try to get the flavors that entice teens to vote, or to vape, I should say, trying to ban those. And so there's efforts in all sorts of states to restrict, put more taxes on vaping, take all sorts of different types of actions to reduce vaping. But on the other hand, one of the surprising things we found in our reporting is that there's advocates for adults who are trying to quit smoking who use vaping to get get themselves off of cigarettes. And also there's some public health researchers and both of those groups who argue that over-regulating vaping products could, you know, harm the more than 3 million adults who are using them as a smoking alternative. So there's a lot of people pushing back on the other side and say, you know, there are, have been these illnesses all over the country, and it's very scary, and so the natural push is to ban things. But, you know, you have to do it in a measured way and be careful to still allow adults who want to use these products to quit smoking to be able to do that.
Well, the Pew Charitable Trust, as I mentioned, has released its 2020 State of the State series. Are there any revelations based on the findings from your group?
Yeah, one other issue that we looked at pretty closely is natural disaster preparation. You know, different states trying to line up money to spend to prepare for ongoing challenges, be it hurricanes, flooding, wildfires, drought, all the things that are probably getting worse with climate change. And the interesting thing is we found this was actually a very bipartisan issue, which is interesting because people always say, oh, climate change, you know, there are climate change deniers, and, you know, people fight over how much human roles causing it. But what we found is regardless of, you know, whether the states use the words climate change or not, they're all taking these actions to prepare for the coming disasters, because whether or not, whatever your other opinions are, it's pretty clear that, you know, hurricanes are getting worse, drought, flooding, it's all having terrible effects on various states. So all these states are finding the money in their budget to proactively try to build seawalls or, you know, trim forests so that there's not as much to burn. So that's just something interesting we found, that it was pretty bipartisan, this push.
And in California, they're trying to allocate $4 billion, that's billion, a $4 billion bond issue to insure against wildfires. That's an amazing expenditure, but one that we know is necessary, and it shows the scale of a state with 50 million people. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what else was interesting is Louisiana in particular is in line to get $1.2 billion, billion with a B, from a federal program that's being run by the Federal Housing and Urban Development Department. And that's going to go to better map flooding areas in Louisiana. So, yeah, there's definitely a lot of money out there that's going to be needed for these changing weather conditions, changing flooding, changing climate change effects.
Well, thank you so much, Noelle Straub of Stateline. And for those who'd like to go to a website quickly, the best place to go is?
Stateline.org.
Thank you, and we'll be back after this timeout. We're joined now by Kathy Kleber on Talk Louisiana. Thank you for joining us. Signature support comes from Brian Lowe Financial, and your number is 877-217-5757. Kathy Kleber is the board chair of the Bridge Center, which is a major new endeavor in our community, slated to open later this year. And for those unacquainted, Kathy, tell us a bit about the concept of the Bridge Center.
The Bridge Center is a crisis stabilization center that will offer mobile assessment teams, crisis observation services, detox if needed, as well as follow-along care management to keep people engaged and in treatment. And these are for individuals that are either in a some sort of behavioral health crisis, whether that's a mental health crisis or a substance abuse crisis, individuals who might end up in jail or in an emergency room. Instead, we can provide crisis stabilization services and get them engaged in treatment.
And the funding comes from where? We had a vote on this, but tell us exactly the kind of budget you're dealing with and where the funds will be derived.
Sure. So the funding, the East Baton Rouge Parish passed a property tax that will garner about $6.3 million in property taxes. We actually have, while the tax was passed in December of 18, we just got our first installment of taxes this past week. So we haven't had any money. I know a lot of people think, well, we passed this tax, why aren't things happening? But we haven't had any money until just this last week. But and lots of things have been happening, but not things that require a whole lot of funding. So the funding, like I said, is part from the tax from the parish, but it also, we will also be using any sort of Medicaid and private insurance funding as well to make up the difference, because we anticipate these services will actually cost about $12 million. And that makeup funding will need to come from, like I said, Medicaid or private insurances for individuals that receive the treatment at the center.
And last week there was a front page story as of last Wednesday about the location, which ordinarily would be a boilerplate story, but it involves a board member in Collis Temple, my dear friend, who his building will be used. And does that mean that Mr. Temple will be off the board?
Yes, Mr. Temple has resigned from the board after the board, and he was never involved. I want to make this clear, he was never involved in any of the discussions or decisions regarding who would potentially get the lease for space. And, you know, it was a very difficult decision for the board, because we've been looking for a space since last September. And we have, contacted real estate agencies. We actually, and I know everybody thought, and we thought, that the Baton Rouge General would be the most likely location. But there were several things that occurred when we were looking at, and more importantly, when the provider that we've chosen, RI International, when they looked at the spaces and trying to retrofit Baton Rouge General was going to be a very difficult endeavor, primarily because there was medical equipment that would have to be removed. Very difficult to fit a hospital-type space into what we call a living room-type model, which is much more home-like. But probably the biggest issue, two big issues. One was that it would have meant that the retrofit would have taken a very long time because of Baton Rouge General's current accreditation and HUD requirements to get through all the hoops to retrofit a HUD facility, and also not to interfere with the other accreditation requirements in that hospital, would have been a much, much longer endeavor. And the second big thing was the cost, both renovation cost. It was anticipated it would probably cost almost double the renovation cost, as well as, primarily was because of removal of medical equipment, mm-hmm. but also lease cost. The lease cost was about half of what the lease cost would have been at Baton Rouge General.
All right, what's the location?
A location is directly across from Baton Rouge General, 3455 Florida Boulevard. It's in mid-city, which is what we wanted in terms of central location in the parish. And like I said, we've been looking at properties since September, and I actually am the one who asked board members, does anybody know of any other properties when it became more and more difficult to retrofit that Baton Rouge General location.
What's the square footage?
The square footage, hold on, I'll give it to you right here. You want to ask me another question while I look
obviously you're going to try to accommodate many people no matter what the square footage is. How many people can be accommodated at one time with this new endeavor?
Well, our hope is for between 24 and 30 observation beds. That means, though, a lot of people think that's not a lot of beds, but it's we anticipate about 5,000 people will utilize this facility in a given year.
5,000?
5,000, that is correct.
And your projected date for opening, Kathy?
Well, again, we're hoping that with using the site that we've chosen, we can get, as soon as the demolition happens, we can get right in there and renovate. We know it'll take a couple of months for renovation. So, again, our hope is late spring, early summer is what we're looking at. And I did find out it has 18,600 square feet. 25,600 square feet. Baton Rouge General had 18,600 square feet.
It's a big facility.
Yes.
And this is an issue that many believe is a big part of the crime in this community, and people have issues that go beyond poverty or substance abuse. How big of a factor is it?
It's a huge factor. These individuals, you know, if we can get people when they're in a mental health crisis, like I said, or a substance abuse crisis, and get them connected to treatment, you know, the chances of them becoming, you know, going back into the workforce, becoming valuable contributors to society, versus a consistent in and out of jails and emergency rooms, petty crimes and other things that occur when somebody is, you know, doesn't get treatment for those issues. So it's a huge factor, and to have a program that can really make a difference, and like I said, up to 5,000 people a year, it's a lot of individuals that we can touch and that we can make a difference, both in terms of crime, but more importantly, just in terms of human capital and lives saved.
I have a question here about how to contact the Bridge Center before the center actually opens. I'm sure that on day one you're not going to be full, but you have people who are interested. How do they express their interest?
The best way to do that is through our website, which is brbridge.
Brbridge?
Yeah, let me make sure I'm giving you the right site.
All right. I suppose that's brbridge.org, is that?
.org, I'm sorry, yes.
There you
yes,
go.
Yes, that's it.
brbridge.org.
And we will have on there as soon, this is important for individuals too, because we're going to be looking for a lot of mental health practitioners locally, and we want to, you know, get as many local individuals employed in this center. So we will have on our website, we will have places that people can go and apply as well.
That's a good question about how many health practitioners you'll have working there.
Yeah, we anticipate over 100 individuals will be working there, either in the mobile crisis team, case management. We will utilize a lot of peer support specialists, individuals who have had substance abuse or mental health issues themselves. But we anticipate over 100 individuals will be mental health practitioners will be utilized at that facility.
Well, thank you for joining us, Kathy Kleber, who is the board chair of the Bridge Center, opening later this year, 3455 Florida Boulevard. I believe I got the address right. Yeah. Thank
yes.
you. Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you so,
good luck
thank
to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Our pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And today we'll find out perhaps whether there will be witnesses at the Senate trial of impeachment trial of Donald John Trump. And as we implored our listeners last week, if you're for or against witnesses, it's a time to call your U.S. senators, Bill Cassidy and John Kennedy, and let them know how you feel. So hopefully our listeners will do exactly that. And the new development with John Bolton is front page in every newspaper in this country. The New York Times, money to Ukraine tied to inquiries. Bolton Books says President rebuffed top cabinet officials who urged him to release the aid. So there we go. And today, of course, the country is in mourning over the loss of Kobe Bean Bryant, born August 23, 1978, Philadelphia, died on the 26th day of January 2020 in Calabasas, California. Helicopter crash killed 9 people, including Kobe's daughter, 13-year-old Gianna. He was a basketball player who had great talent, came right from high school as an 18-year-old, and was an 18-time NBA All-Star. Kobe Bryant, dead at 41 years old, and one of the great ironies is that he died on January 26th, the same day that another Bryant, a sports legend, died 37 years ago, January 26, 1983, Bear Bryant died in Alabama, Birmingham. And Kobe and Bear had much in common, despite coming from vastly different backgrounds, 65 years apart. And we'll be talking about the legacy of Kobe Bryant, I'm sure, as the week progresses, but a terrible tragedy for the world at large. Signature support for Talk Louisiana from Brian Lowe Financial. Until tomorrow, for Matt Doyle, I'm Jim Inkster. Stay tuned.